Behold, to the episode of the Gaming Memories Podcast, where I, your host, the Prophet, who hath been anointed by the gaming gods themselves, even Miyamoto the Father, Kojima the Son, and Carmack the Holy Ghost, who appeared to me in vision, commanding I create the one true gaming podcast by interviewing creative and interesting people about their favorite gaming memories growing up. But today, that's not what we're doing, because prophets are hypocrites, so deal with it. After today's a great episode, we're going to be talking to my friends of a tradition going on around 10 years where we get together every year at the end of the year and talk about our favorite games of the year. It's really just that simple. The YouTube edit will have footage of the games along with our commentary, which is, I think, the best way to experience the episode. But yeah, that's it. We're going to talk about our favorite games of the year. It's always one of the most popular episodes of the year. It's probably one of the funnest to do. It is a bitch to edit, but if you're listening to this, that's already been done, so you don't care. Anyway, before we get on, let's talk about giving me money. If you'd like to directly support the podcast because you're a fucking idiot or you have money to blow, you can head over to patreon.com/gaming_memories or just click the link in my link tree and go throw your money away for worthless things like a shout out on my emulation Bible spreadsheet, an invitation to a private Discord full of heathens, or access to all my tutorial content. Honestly, none of this is worth your money, so please only sign up if you primarily just want to support the podcast or my video work on social media. Only do it if you think my content is worth donating because you like my content. And then you might get some extra shit on top of that. That's how I would think about it. And that's how I want you to think about it. Because I don't want to deal with you bitching and moaning. I deal with enough bitching and moaning in my comment section every fucking day. So I want this to be full of people who just like my shit. They're happy with it. They want to throw me a couple bones and get some extra shit out of it. That's all they want from it. Otherwise, you can just simply like, share, comment, spread the good news of the gaming gospel, and ye shall be blessed. I say these things in the name of Miyamoto the Father, Kojima the Son, and Carmack the Holy Ghost. Amen, and enjoy the show. Welcome, welcome to the end of the year final game extravaganza. We'll start with me. You guys know who I am, Prophet, the one and only true prophet of the restored gaming gospel. That's it. You guys already know me. Let's move on to Stephen Gibbons. Please introduce yourself.
Stephen Gibbons, here to contribute what I can, I guess.
Stephen's a hardcore gamer, for sure.
You know, I get less hardcore every year because as I see my number of games I've played, I barely made 10 games this year. You know, last year maybe it was like 14, year before that, probably 20. It just slowly diminishes, man.
All right, let's go on to Robert.
Robert Gibbons, the brother of Stephen Gibbons. And I am not slowing down on my gaming. Not only do I play too many games, but I listen to all these gaming podcasts. And I have to tell you, Cade, real quickly, I listened to your edits of this podcast from last year, of our Game of the Year from last year. And like a week later, I was listening to a different gaming podcast called Still Loading, and I heard your voice again. You were the guest on that podcast out of the blue. I had no idea. It was awesome.
Shout out to Josh at Still Loading. I think I've been on Josh's podcast 4 or 5 times. He's been on mine a handful of times. He's been doing it for a long time. Josh is very professional and very consistent. Everything I'm not. So if you want a legit gaming podcast that you can consistently listen to, that's consistent high quality, sounds like me and Robert would both highly recommend the Still Loading podcast. All right, let's go on to Lauren.
I'm Lauren. I love video games. I don't play them as much as I used to, although I think this year it picked up a little bit from last year. So I'm excited to talk about my top 10 games played this year. But I have a little channel on YouTube called Unraveling the Pattern, completely unrelated to gaming. It's a Wheel of Time focused channel where I talk about book lore and the TV show on Amazon Prime that is medium quality. Keep hoping it gets better. But anyway, that's me. Excited to be here. Excited to do this again with you guys.
Yeah, if you're into Wheel of Time, he's being modest. His channel's big. He just got flown out to Prague by Amazon, just telling us about it before we started recording.
And it's not medium quality either.
All right, Loper, you're up.
Right, my name's Stephen Loper. My day job is laparoscopic surgical assistant. I'm sporting my Throw Your Lopes
nice
stuff today. Got my Loper's hat on. Found out this summer that was a mascot for the University of Nebraska at Kearney. So I'm pretty excited to have an actual mascot, this hat. And yeah, part-time gamer. And yeah, been doing this, I think, for the same amount of time as Cade as well.
And I would say that Loper's low-key, I'm constantly every year surprised that, like, you seem to keep track of developers and teams and who did what. Even if you're not playing all the games, it seems like you keep your thumb on the pulse in general.
I try to. Yeah. Which is ironic because I don't actually play any new games. I just watch the development.
Yeah, what's your rule? You only play something that's 10 years old or something like that? What was it again?
About 5 years old. Yeah.
Okay.
Honestly, like, that's why I watch development, because in today's world, that's about how long it takes to finish a game. After it's released, genuinely, it takes about 5 years from when it's released to when it's in its finished state.
Sad but true.
And then last but not least, the great older brother.
The older, better brother. This is Reagan. I'm the least hardcore gamer of the group now, I would say. I do not even have 10 games. I'll be joining in when we get to number 5.
Hey, it's last year you had 4, so it's an improvement.
Yeah, I did play a few more games this year. I wish I had more time to do it, but I don't, sadly.
Is what it is. Such is life. All right.
Such is life.
So we're going to go through our top 10 games one at a time. I think we agreed in our group text a shorter time limit through 10 through 5, right? 10 through 6?
Yes.
Honorable mentions.
Starting. Oh, yeah. If you have honorable mentions, I just have 10. But if you do have honorable mentions, definitely make those fast. And then let's just do it one at a time, but try to keep anything above 5 as short and sweet as possible. Because I think, yeah, we did 4.5 hours last year, and I got it down to 2.5. Maybe if we could do like 2.5, I could get it down to a super sexy like 1.5.
Oh, I wanted us to break our record. Let's go for 5 hours, guys.
Okay. I mean, we can.
No, I like the 1.5 hour model. I'm down for that.
All right. So it looks like I'm first on the list. My number 10 is the first JRPG that was released, at least in North America, I believe also in Japan, 90% sure in Japan, 100% sure in North America, on the PlayStation 1, called Beyond the Beyond. I'm going to warn everybody right now, this is a terrible JRPG. I would say this is my favorite JRPG that's objectively bad, but for some reason, I still like it. Mainly because growing up, I got exposed to JRPGs. I didn't have access to a Super Nintendo, didn't play anything else. I had a Sega, I didn't get into Phantasy Star, but I saw Chrono Trigger. Reagan was talking about Final Fantasy II. I think I borrowed your Super Nintendo and played 2, or somehow I got my American 2, not Japanese 2. Anyways, I finally got a hold of my own JRPG that was Beyond the Beyond. So it was the first like JRPG I played that was mine. It wasn't a friend's or a brother's that I could actually sit down and have my time with. And it's terrible. I never beat it as a kid, but I beat it this year. Did a video on my YouTube of all the bosses, messed around with emulation, got it set up the way I wanted. And even with emulation and save states and speed boost, it was still a slog. But I don't know. I actually enjoyed it. It was like, maybe it's the Dark Souls thing inside me, but I enjoyed the hard work and the tedium to get to the end and beat a game that I couldn't beat as a kid. Obviously, there was a lot of nostalgia. It is very similar to Golden Sun series. So if you're into JRPGs and you think Shining in the Holy Ark or Golden Sun or any of those games are at least moderately good and you want to play an obscure, not so great JRPG, I would recommend it. But otherwise, you should still clear. But I enjoyed it.
Way to sell it.
Yep. It's like, I want to do a YouTube video that's like the worst JRPG that I legitimately like. Some sort of dichotomy like that. I can think of some other games in my past, I'm sure you guys can too, where you know the game's not good, but you're still enjoying it. That happens occasionally, and that's what happened with this one. All right.
It's like McDonald's. We all know McDonald's is terrible, but you all like it.
Yeah.
But you know?
Let's be real. It still tastes pretty good most of the time. Chicken nuggets are not good, but the burgers, I can eat a burger from McDonald's.
Oh, see, I like those chicken nuggets.
Right.
But whatever.
All right, so Beyond the Beyond, number 10. Number 9, I've talked about this not last year, but the year before. It would be higher on my list because it's one of my favorite games of all time. It might be in my Mount Rushmore of games, but since I've brought it up before, I had to knock it down to number 9. But I played through Remedy's Control again this year. In preparation for Alan Wake, which I refuse to play until I get a new GPU, because that's a game I only want to play in the utmost, most perfect quality. Otherwise, I'm not going to play it. But I played through Control again, because Control directly connects to the Alan Wake, Sam Lake universe. We've talked about Control. I think most people listening will know Control. I love the lore. I love the universe. I love how it directly connects to Alan Wake. The art direction in Control, other than I don't love Death Stranding, the gameplay, but I love the art direction of that game. I think Death Stranding and Control probably have my favorite art direction of any game right now. Replaying Control with a better graphics card this time, because I had upgraded again. So before the 3090, what did I have? And I can't remember. I had something before the 3090. 3090 has better ray tracing. But if you Control with ray tracing, I couldn't quite get a perfect 60 FPS though, even with the 3090. So we're going to have to replay it when the 4090 comes in. And I might actually get experience Control in its full glory. The game is awesome. I don't want to spoil anything. If you haven't played it, it won Game of the Year years ago for a reason, in my opinion. And art direction's fantastic. The lore, I mean, if you're like that type of person that gets into lore and likes to figure out connections and why certain characters appear in this franchise and how they connect to that franchise and dive down Reddit threads and go balls deep, then the Control and or Sam Lake universe is for you. Number 8. Another older game, the original Wipeout on PlayStation 1, but there is a unofficial PC decomp where you decomp, for those who don't know what a decomp is, it's a PC port of the game, but the way they get around the legality of it is it's all original code, but you have to supply the ROM file and it extracts the assets from the ROM file, like the textures and the geometry and the levels, but the code is actually all original code. It's a native PC version. They call them decomp projects. And Wipeout 1 on the original PlayStation is a big reason I got into electronic music in the first place. Replaying it as a native PC port, 4K, 60 FPS, increased draw distance. There's so many improvements to the game. There's too many to list. It is better than what I would imagine a legitimate proper remaster would be, given the current state of the average remasters that are coming out these days. This is better than what you could hope for. So if you're into Wipeout and you like the original Wipeout, it's really easy to download. Almost any computer can run it. And it is the original Wipeout, but just remastered with all the quality of life improvements you could want, better controls, physics, graphics options, et cetera, et cetera. That is number 8. Number 7 is another Wipeout, Wipeout 64, because I played through all the Wipeouts for a YouTube video this year. I did one track from every track in the entire Wipeout series with all my best settings. It's like a 3-hour video. I go through every single track from every game in the series. So I played all the Wipeouts. Many of them I had never played before, and Wipeout 64 is one of those. And that, in my opinion, is the sleeping giant of the series. It doesn't get any rep. People don't talk about it. I'm into Wipeout. I hadn't heard about Wipeout 64 as much. I assumed it was just like a knockoff version of XL or 1. On the 64, it seemed like a side quest in the series. It's actually really, really awesome. So if you're into Wipeout, love the series, love anti-gravity racing, Wipeout 64 is worth trying. And number 6, my last in my barrage, is, it should be higher on the list, but haven't quite finished it. And I know we had an argument about whether you can finish a game on this list or not. I wouldn't have 10 games if I had completed all of them, but I'm pretty far into this game. I don't know how it's going to stick its landing, so that's why I didn't quite put it higher. There's a good chance it'll end up being higher. It is Blasphemous 2, and I love the art direction. I love pixel games. I love Metroidvanias. I love dark aesthetics, gothic, blood, guts, religious overtones, Dark Souls-esque storytelling. Blasphemous 2, it's Blasphemous 1, but everything about it is better. Like, everything about it is better. So if you like Blasphemous 1, Blasphemous 2 is maybe the best. I don't know. Hollow Knight's pretty good. It's up there in like the top 10 modern Metroidvanias. Bada bing, bada boom. 10 through 6. There we go. All right. Who's up? Who's next on here?
Okay. My honorable mention is a game that I've owned since, I don't even know, ever since I had my Nintendo 64, 25 years ago? And I've had it forever, I've owned it forever, and I finally, through emulation on my Steam Deck, beat it. Donkey Kong 64.
Wow.
I figured it's worth a shout out after all these years.
That is great. One of my all-time favorites.
It's a great game. Didn't make my top 10, but it still was. It was on my bucket list forever. Finally beat it. And I 100%ed it. Got everything.
That's pretty impressive.
Number 10. So number 10 is not technically a game, but Mario 3 Advance, the bonus levels, which you can now play on Nintendo Switch if you have, you know, their online thing where you can get NES, and N64 games to play. So there was, if you had a, I don't know how it worked, but something to do with some kind of Game Boy Advance e-reader, if you hooked it up to your Mario 3 Advance game, you could get these bonus levels to play. And there's like 30 of them or something. But they're awesome. They're like a mishmash of Mario World with Mario 2 and Mario 3. Like there's some levels where you pull the little veggies out of the ground, and there's these other elements that they've kind of mashed together. It feels a little bit like Mario Maker, but kind of cool little hidden thing that not many people played until now that they've released it on the Switch with those e-reader levels included. So good fun. That's my number 10. Number 9. As you guys know from last year, I've been playing through all of the Castlevania games.
Yes, I was wondering what you were going to say this year. I've been waiting for this.
So this one kind of doesn't count. In fact, I think Konami, they have come out and said this is not canon, but Dead Cells, the Castlevania DLC, as I was playing through, I got excited about that because they haven't released a Castlevania game in what? I don't know how many years. And so I played Dead Cells just so I could play the Castlevania DLC, and it was really cool. The game Dead Cells, which just comes along with this recommendation, is actually really, really fun. It's a quick, fast-paced, like, roguelike game where you die repeatedly, but every time you come back, you maintain some of your experience or some of the items you collect and stuff like that, so you can get a little bit further. So I beat the main game, but I also beat the Castlevania variation.
Is that Castlevania, is it a roguelike, or is it a traditional Metroidvania, like, map for that DLC?
It is a Metroidvania, but it's also a... It's randomized maps every time you play, so it's never the same exactly.
Okay.
And even in the Castlevania area, and if you do, I don't remember now too clearly, but once you've met some certain requirements in the Castlevania DLC, you get to even turn the castle upside down and you play as Richter. You can turn into Richter through some gateway or something, and then you can play through and beat a boss as Richter Belmont, which is pretty cool. A little nod to
nice
Symphony of the Night, but. 8 is Spider-Man Miles Morales. Awesome game. I played it earlier in the year. Don't remember too much about it, but I remember loving the story. And the year that I played the first Spider-Man game, that was my top game of the year. I love that game, and I love Spider-Man Miles Morales as well. And they did a great job with the story. If you haven't played them, definitely worth your time. Number 7, Rondo of Blood. This is where Castlevania games actually start getting good. Like, to be honest, these older ones, they're fun, but there's just this element of clunkiness to each one. But once you get to Rondo of Blood, that's where it starts to feel fluid, and the gameplay is a lot of fun. You get to choose alternate characters to play as if you want. So I really enjoyed that game. I enjoyed the platforming, enjoyed the levels, the bosses, all that stuff. You're playing as some Belmont in every single game, so you've got your whip. So when I played Rondo of Blood, I actually didn't play as whatever the default. I don't even know who the main character is in that.
It's Richter.
But you can also play as Maria.
Yes.
And so I played as Maria, and she has like spells she casts, and she gets these little like familiars that that assist you in different ways. So I actually I only played it as her, but I completed it. I got every trophy on the PlayStation through that. It was really a lot of fun and enjoyed that game a lot. And then number 6, Moss 2. So this is a VR game. Moss 1 was way up on my list the year I played it. It's a stationary VR game where you sit still in a chair and you have these kind of, it's a little bit like a Mario 64, you know, like a 3D platformer, but you're this little mouse with a little sword and you're exploring these castles and these just really beautiful areas and finding items, fighting enemies, really enjoyable VR games. So if you've got VR, I highly recommend. Probably at the top of my list for VR games.
Robert, let's hear it.
Okay, I have 3 really quick honorable mentions I'm going to rattle off. Everything is a game that came out a couple of years ago that's really chill, but there's this narrator that just spews philosophy as you roll around the world. Very interesting game. Loved listening to the narrator. Pony Island. This is by the guy who made Inscription, which is one of my favorite games. And this was the original foray into games where the computer is kind of possessed and the game's not what you think it is. They announced a sequel at the Game Awards. And my last honorable mention is Blue Fire, which is kind of like Hollow Knight, but in 3D. Really fun, but the DLC, which was released for free, is so crazy difficult that I couldn't finish it. I had to watch a video. But everything up until the ending of the game is doable and fun, and it's more about platforming than it is about boss challenges, but still got that Souls-like feel to it. My number 10, Legend of Zelda Link's Awakening for the Switch. I never played on the Game Boy, but I had heard that a lot of people loved it. I'd heard that it was inspired by Twin Peaks, of all things, which I love Twin Peaks, and so I was very curious to see how The Legend of Zelda could be partnered with something that crazy. And the connections are loose, but they're there, and it's very fun and cute. The number 9 game is Blasphemous 1. So I haven't played the sequel yet, but I did beat the first one this year, and I really enjoyed it. All right, my number 8, this is definitely a cheat, but I played 3 Souls-like co-op games with my brother this year. So I'm just going to copy and paste that into the doc. Remnant from the Ashes, which I played earlier this year with Steven. Remnant 2, which we played last month, and Salt and Sacrifice, which we played a few months ago. All 3 of those were really fun to play with Steven Gibbons, and all 3 similar in that they're Souls-likes. One's a 2D, the Remnant ones are 3D, and they're just fun co-op games. Then number 7 is Bowser's Fury for the Nintendo Switch, which I finally got around to playing. I love 3D platformers. You've never heard of Bowser's Fury?
No.
It was included as a pack-in with the Mario 3D World Nintendo Switch port, but you could only play it if you bought the Mario 3D World. For my number 6, I have also Spider-Man Miles Morales, which I just completed a week ago. There were parts of it in the middle where I wasn't feeling it as much, but it's just so polished, and the story is really good. The voice acting is incredible. They put so much dedication into that game, and it's so fun to play that it had to go up on my list. So that's my 10 through 6.
All right, Lauren.
Good list so far. Well, you guys know me. I like re-listening to the same music over and over, watching the same movies over and over, and playing the same games over and over. So my honorable mention, I will get to it, but it's actually a replay of my number 2, so I'll have to talk about that later. My number 10 is Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order. That was the first of the Star Wars Jedi games. I replayed that in anticipation of the new Star Wars game that came out later this year. Loved it, but it's at my number 10 because it was a replay. Shadow of Mordor. I think I know what kinds of games I like, and Shadow of Mordor, when I played it the first time a couple years ago, I think it was on my top, it might have even been my top game or close to it. And it's one of those rare games where I love it so much, I like 100%ing it, even doing the weird quests, like picking all the random vegetables out of the grass or whatever. Like, I really enjoy it.
That's a great game.
It's great. So I replayed that. My number 8, again, this is a replay of my number 1, so I'm going to save that for later because I don't want to give it away yet. But I replayed it, and it impacted me just as much or more on the second playthrough, so I'm really excited to talk about that. Number 7, Elden Ring, New Game +++. I played it. I think it was actually my very first playthrough. I have played that through New Game Plus several times. I just keep playing, and it's just so fun to be like super tanky and go in and just bonk all the bosses being way overpowered at this point. And I just love running through Elden Ring. And I swear, every time I play it, I still find things I didn't find previously. So just an amazing game. That would be higher on the list if it wasn't a replay. And my number 6, another replay. During Thanksgiving break, I was like, I gotta play Bloodborne again. It's such a good game. So I played it. I loved it so much. I did the DLC and everything that I immediately started New Game Plus and played it again all the way through, except for the DLC. So those are my top, or bottom 5, I guess, rather.
All right, Loper, hit us.
All right, man. So I've got 3 honorable mentions as well. The 3 I wanted to mention were Far Lone Sails, Barlone Sails is a nice chill puzzle game that reminded me a lot of the left to right puzzling of Inside or Limbo. And it was mixed with the controls of Lovers of a Dangerous in a Dangerous Space-Time, where you have one little character that has to run around and control the entire ship by themselves in kind of a Mad Max world and palette. It was all black, white, and red. Really visually stunning, nice audio, indie publisher. My next honorable mention is My Memory of Us, which stars Patrick Stewart as the narrator and features some nice amusing puzzles with kind of a cartoony visual. Also a black, white, and red palette, and shines as a history lesson of the impact of World War II on Poland as a whole and their children specifically. There was a lot of love put into it by an all Polish development team. And spoiler alert, Polish developers are going to get a little love from me this year. And my last honorable mention, courtesy of The Prophet, Cade, is Titanfall 2, which continues to be amazing. If you need to know anything about Titanfall 2, please check the videos and scroll down to the bottom. It has an absolutely amazing breakdown of what makes Titanfall 2 just so good. So, to my number 10. My number 10 this year is shockingly a game that came out last year, and it's actually in early access, and it's a game called V Rising. It's a vampire MMORPG. And I don't normally like those for the massively part, but I do get pulled in when they drop that, and it's just a multiplayer online role-playing game. I played it with a friend group that I have. We play once a week and rented a server for 3 months. It was a lot of fun. Basically, it's a top-down, real-time, day-night cycle crafting survival vampire game. You start as a level 1 vampire who gets more and more powerful as you defeat the bosses. You get stronger weapons as you get better materials. You get an expanding castle, which you get to customize with decorative items, different flooring, different sconces and hedges and all kinds of things that any you know, genuine vampire would have. You can even get followers. You can enslave the local villagers and lead them back to your castle and drain their blood for later.
Oh, I like this. Now we're talking.
Number 9 is Sid Meier's Civilization 6. So I first got Civ 3 and 4 on deep discounts when Steam was young, and I actually played it for 51 hours, and I didn't even like it that much. These games are so engrossing. I played Civ 5 a lot, and then finally got into Civ 6 because it came out in 2016, and it was on my list. And I liked 6 so much. It took everything that was good about 5 and improved on it. They added fascinating changes in the way you establish your territory around the cities by incorporating areas called districts for board game lovers, strategy lovers. I think Civ 6 is one of the best games to spend hours feeding your little OCD sensibilities. Number 8, another newer game, Aliens Fireteam Elite. This came out in 2021, way earlier than I normally would play, but I had a bunch of friends that were playing it. It's a team-based horde shooter, over the shoulder, really good overall, but didn't do anything spectacular. The game play was a lot of fun. It's a nice mix of clearing out the tunnel as you're moving from point A to point B, or holding points while the horde converges on you and you have to hold it for a certain time period, to a couple of missions that had objective-based operations. There's some really nice environments that felt varied. Human spaceships, alien planets in ruins, other alien ships. There were different classes that played very differently, and you could create variety and load out differences that could vary your ability to play it. Unfortunately, there aren't that many missions. That was one downside of this game. Excellent sound design and visuals that made it really feel like Aliens. I think this is the closest thing I've had to a game that simulated the movie Aliens, the second movie, the sequel, with a bunch of gun-toting soldiers descending into the depths of an alien planet to eradicate the infestation. And love it or hate it, the story was actually centered a lot more around the lore of the Prometheus movie than it was any of the Aliens movies that came before it. And it talked a lot about the engineers, the precursor people. That was kind of the plot of this game. So if you liked Prometheus, this is like a good game.
Freaking love Prometheus.
Yeah, I love that movie.
Game looks cool.
I haven't heard of it, but I'm checking it out.
It's a lot of fun. I'd play it with any of you guys anytime. And it's not a huge investment if you're worried about time. My friend group and I, we would play kind of like one. Each chapter has like three missions, and each mission's about, I don't know, 20, 30 minutes long. Number 7, Doom 2016.
Mm.
So I've never really had a huge itch for FPS games purely, but every so often I really want to play one. And this was one of those that absolutely did not disappoint. It knows what kind of game it wants to be, and it's so perfect at what it does. And in the words of Carmack, the Holy Ghost, from his book Masters of Doom, story in a game is like a story in a porn movie. It's expected to be there, but it's not that important. Now, I couldn't disagree with this statement anymore. I really love stories.
In your porn?
In my games.
How are they going to fix that washer? How are they going to fix the dryer?
A good job is always good no matter the situation.
That's right. No, I love a good story everywhere. This game punctuates the fact that even people like me who love stories don't have to have that to enjoy a game, because their goals in making this game were fulfilled perfectly. Buttery smooth controls, various demons, various guns with fun upgrades, changes of play styles, beautifully yet disgusting visuals, crisp yet traumatizing sound design. The most surprising part to me about this game was that the frenetic play style and the chaos actually came together once you got into it in an almost smooth, calm, satisfying way.
It's like a graceful game.
Yeah.
Under the hood. Yeah.
Like there's this cadence, almost like a clicker game where you're going through the steps. Okay. Run in, shoot, throw the grenade, swap guns, stun the charging enemy, shoot him again, get low on ammo, chainsaw glory kill for more ammo and armor, spilling out like a bloody gory ammo pinata. And then repeat. And you just go through this process over and over again, and you just kind of get into this flow, which is bizarre because it's just inundating you with color and gore and flashes, and you're speeding around the map like a madman. But there was almost this cadence, this flow that was bizarre because it stood in such juxtaposition to what I was actually watching. Really interesting.
So are you playing this on PC? Are you playing with a controller, though, or are you playing with keyboard and mouse?
No, controller. Keyboard and mouse all day. I would never play a Doom game with a controller. Doom 64.
I'm one of those people, I play all FPSs with a controller. Because I didn't play any FPSs until Halo. And that's my first FPS that I tried to get good at. I mean, I played them, but I never got into them. And then I got good at Halo, and it's just, to me, that's the standard. I know I get so much shit for it. Anytime I do a video and people like spot that I'm like playing a game with a twin stick controller, oh my God, the commas just go. I already know it's going to happen. I just prepare for it.
Hey, speaking of controllers, let's get to number 6. Number 6 is another newer game, again, because it's multiplayer, and it's Hell Let Loose. This is an early access game. It was released on PlayStation 5 recently. So this is a shooter that you could pick up your controllers on. This is yet another indie World War II shooter that tries to do what a lot of games like Call of Duty, Battlefield, even Battlefront have tried to do, which is make a detailed, deep, big first-person shooter that makes you feel like you're fighting in an actual war. But this is the first one that I've seen that consistently makes it real, makes it actually feel like you're fighting in a war. One thing that makes this game interesting is that there's only two-person sniper squads per platoon. So you can't have, like most Battlefield matches, half of the team being snipers. There's only two snipers on the entire map. Engineers and support players can sway the battle as much as the snipers, tanks, or machine gunners. Its weakest points are probably the things that make it the most accurate World War II shooter that I've ever played, where most games reward things like fast twitch shooting, don't really require a whole lot of communication to have things like HUD or ping or outlines of players, even aim assists that don't simulate reality. This game discards most of that.
Did you say ping?
Ping.
Peeing.
P-I-N-G.
Ping.
No. Okay. I thought you were saying like you have to manage peeing. Like your guy can't just sit and snipe. No,
that's Manuel Samuel.
That's a different game. That's what Steven does on
his
day job.
Yeah, that's my day job. I'm talking about games. But yeah, no, it's incredible. You've got a deep strategy that most games don't have. In a battlefield match, you show up and there's a bunker or some barbed wire or something that could get blown up. In this one, the engineers actually have to come out. They have to get a certain amount of supply from the support person, and then they have to build it. And it takes time. You have to put it where they want it, and then they have to build it. And the barbed wire does what barbed wire would do. It makes it so that the infantry can't move through that area. The maps are huge. They're 4 kilometers square, and they're a one-to-one scale that were based on archival reference photographs, satellite photography, and height imagery. It's incredible. It's an awesome game. It's still early access, and it's very much a game that can suck the second you try it because you have a bad team that's not communicating, or you get a good team that's totally talking, and you've got your squad leader telling you exactly where to go and what to do, and you carry it out, and it just flows and is amazing. It's the matches take about an hour each. They're not short. They're not quick. It's a dedicated fan base. It's a dedicated player group. And it makes for some really amazing experiences that are all just driven by the player experiences.
Sounds like you played a lot of online games, Steve.
It's kind of funny. You said, you know, I don't play FPS very often, but when I really want to play one, and then your next 3 games were all FPSs.
There's one more to come.
All right, we're back up to my number 5. So we talked about Blasphemous 2. Did any of you guys play The Last Fate? That's like the Bloodborne Metroidvania that was kickstarted, made a bunch of money. Look it up on YouTube. It's called Last Fate or The Last Fate. It is Symphony of the Night, but Bloodborne as far as art direction.
Wishlisting him. That looks awesome. It looks exactly like Blasphemous.
It's Blasphemous, but it's more like Bloodborne, like Victorian area, Gothic castles, the story and the lore. I mean, they're not being shy about that these are a bunch of Bloodborne fans who wanted to make like a Metroidvania with sort of the setting and aesthetic of Bloodborne. It's very obvious. It's a Metroidvania, it's Blasphemous, but with the Bloodborne art direction. The still pixel. Reason I think I like Metroidvania is it's such a mature genre that everybody kind of already knows how to make a decent Metroidvania because the blueprint has been around for a long time. So if you happen to like that blueprint, that style of game, there's so many options. And a lot of people will complain online, there's so many pixel Metroidvanias that people won't stop releasing them. Well, because people keep buying it because a lot of people like those games.
It's like there's lots of music with electric guitars in it.
What's exactly. The deal?
What's with all these drums and all this music?
Yeah. Again, so I can't put Symphony of the Night every year on my list, but I'm always playing games where I'm trying to get back to the magic of Symphony of the Night. And Last Fate was pretty good. It's definitely more difficult than Symphony of the Night. There's definitely some tedium. It is way better in terms of save points and quality of life than even Blasphemous 2 so far. Like, this is another one where I'm pretty far into it. Not 100%, but I'm pretty far. So, like, I feel like unless they just do something really terrible at the end of the game, I have a pretty good grip on how the game is. I love the lore, the characters, the voice acting, finding out who you're. It's very, again, the formula's been around. You start the game, you don't know who your main character is. He's shrouded in mystery. Why is he so powerful? Where did he come from? Who is he? Yada, yada, yada. It's a formula that works. As you play, you learn more about the lore, the world, your character, the other characters, what's going on. It's all steeped in dark, gothic, religious overtones, which is right up my alley. Apparently up other people's alleys because Blasphemous 2 and Last Fate both came out this year. Both have done really, really well. if you like Metroidvanias, it's not Hollow Knight, but I think last year I talked about Ghost Song as well, which is like a Metroid obvious game, like homage to Metroid. So I usually have one or two Metroidvanias. I would say it's like you have Hollow Knight and you have the Ori games. And then under that, you have Blasphemous, Last Faith, Ghost Song, and like this big conglomerate of Metroidvanias that are really solid. They're just not quite Hollow Knight, not quite Ori. All right, so we're doing one at a time. So yeah, the Last Faith pixel Bloodborne Metroidvania, tried and true formula. Every year, I think I've had one or two Metroidvanias on my list because, like Lauren, I know what I like. I like what I like. I play what I like. All right, let's go on to Stephen Gibbons.
Okay, so speaking of Metroidvanias, my number five is Salt and Sacrifice.
On Steam, Salt and Sanctuary has great reviews. Salt and Sacrifice does not. And I was actually looking at that today because it's on sale right now for the winter sale.
I liked number one better, but it was still great. Robert and I played it together, and the bosses felt, even though they look different, they all kind of felt similar when you were fighting them. And I kind of look forward to like the variation in boss fights in Dark Souls games and in any Metroidvania. I that's kind of a big part of it for me. Co-op was a blast. Solo, super fun, just like number one. I love both of those games a lot. I highly recommend those. And Reagan, I think you were the one that told me about Salt and Sanctuary.
That was on my list, I don't know, a few years ago. The game is fantastic.
It's super good. Talking about art style, I love the aesthetic in that game too. Really good.
So it sounds like the negatives on here are a bunch of Capcom haters. They're saying, this isn't Salt and Sanctuary. This isn't a sequel. It's a 2D Monster Hunter.
I've read that criticism, and the bottom line is,
I don't see how that's a bad thing.
Right. If you have fun doing it, you have fun doing it. And Steven and I had fun, so.
We did engage with some, like, you replay the same monsters over and over, but they get more difficult. If you want to do this optional, you don't have to. But man, we were hitting our heads against the wall with some of those. There was one I think we probably attempted like 50 times, maybe more. I don't know. Fun game.
Robert.
I'm up, and my number five is Control, which Kate already talked about. And
yes!
I need to add that to my list as well.
Like you, Kate, I am super excited to play Alan Wake 2. I have not bought it yet, but I plan to. I loved Alan Wake 1, and I've loved all of Remedy's games for the most part. I love the Max Payne games. Control was something different, though, because it took a vibe that came from the X-Files, which I also love, made this just really intriguing story with weird stuff happening all the time. So the story pulled me in. The gameplay is super fun. And I had a blast playing through Control and both DLCs.
Did you play it on PlayStation, Robert, or on
Steam? No, I played it on Epic on PC.
Oh, okay. I'm guessing, Cade, you have it on Steam?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, it's all you, dude.
Steven, I think you'll really like that game. It's really fun.
I need to, because I love the Alan Wake games. I know you mentioned that to me earlier, that I didn't realize they were related until just like maybe a month ago when Robert told me, but...
Lauren.
Yeah, my number five, sat down and played this in like one afternoon, the Stanley Parable Ultra Deluxe Edition.
I love the Stanley Parable.
So I think the Stanley Parable was on my list, I don't know, more than 5 years ago, because I got that achievement where I didn't open the game for over 5 years. The Stanley Parable Ultra Deluxe Edition is just more of the same. Literally, it's the same game with a bunch of added endings and new content. And it was fun to kind of revisit the original game and to find way more Easter eggs and way more details. And I don't want to spoil it too much, but, you know, if you love the commentary of the first game about video games, then this one just takes it to the next level. Like, it is hilarious. There's a point when there's like a giant neon sign that points to a door that says, new content right here, go in this door, you know, and then you go into that area and there's all kinds of funny things. Had a really great time revisiting that. It's wittier than ever. It's even more kind of on the nose and kind of a love letter to video games. Definitely worth your time. It's quick and enjoyable. And you can go online and watch the other endings. And there are some really weird things that you can do in that game to get odd endings. But check it out. It's really fun.
All right, Loper, you're up.
My number five, speaking of me not playing a lot of FPSs, is my third FPS. And it's Wolfenstein 2, The New Colossus. If you've played the first one, this is just an almost immediate sequel, and they decide that they've kind of liberated Europe, so they need to move in to America and to go help the U.S. with their fight against the Nazis. The thing that I really like about this game and other FPS-type games isn't necessarily the frantic shooting that Doom has, which can be a ton of fun, but I love this game for its story and its variability, allowing you to be a sneaky assassin as well as a dual-wielding semi-automatic shotgun maniac. The characters really carried this game, I would say more than the other entry. The characters were so memorable and fun. There were some returning characters that were the same. There's a couple of new characters that are just fun and crazy. And they set the game in some really interesting places. So you have the bombed out ruins of New York. You've got New Orleans, which is now a really oppressed ghetto. You go to Roswell, New Mexico, of all places. It just added some new fun mechanics that were actually interesting for some more bizarre ways to go through the levels that was a little reminiscent of a Metroid-style game where you could go to the exact same area but access different places or different parts. It blends good FPS shooting, good stories, good characters, an option to be sneaky and slow in your approach, and then enough satisfying gunplay that when everything falls apart, swap out your dual-wielded machine guns and just start mowing people down. Wolfenstein 2.
All right, Reagan, you're finally in the game, dude.
I'm in the game. Put me in, coach. Put me in. My number five is actually a pretty silly game. It really only takes one night to completely go through the whole thing. If you know, last year I played It Takes Two. It was like one of my best game of the year.
Number one, yeah.
So I really like the idea of co-op, like couch co-op, playing games with my wife and my daughter. And so I was looking on PlayStation 4 other games that I could do that with, and I found a game called Stick Fighter. And Stick Fighter, Lauren, have you played it?
I haven't played it, but I've seen it. My kids like it. Yeah.
Dude, it's the stupidest game, but it's so much fun to just grab a controller. Everyone can grab a controller and just play, and just play for a couple hours, and the game is absolutely hilarious.
I cannot find Stick Fighter. Are you sure
it's called Stick Fight the game? Stick Fight : the game.
Reagan, get your game straight.
Yeah. That's for editors. Yeah, so the game, like a level pops up, you're all three there, and you just gotta kill each other.
Doesn't it drop guns randomly?
Yeah, random guns drop. Yeah. You can pick up guns or spears or bazookas. And then there'll be like random weapons that only exist on like one level.
And they're ridiculous power weapons, right? Where you just like blast everyone. Yeah.
And then it'll randomly take you to a level that's like, and it'll give you these stats. It's like, blue player is the worst player. They've died the most.
Good recommend.
That's it. So there's my game number five.
All righty. Back to me, number four. I'm going to join Stephen Loper, the only FPS on my list. Did you guys see anything about the game that came out this year called Atomic Heart, by chance?
Yes.
It's definitely BioShock inspired. I mean, when I saw it, I'm like, okay, these are a bunch of people who love BioShock and they want to make their own version of BioShock. I was blown away, one, about the visuals. I forgot, you might know this, Loper, who made this game?
I don't remember the name. I know that they were embroiled in a little bit of controversy. Mudfish.
Mudfish. What's funny. This is why I don't believe anything that comes out, especially in gaming media. It's all clickbait bullshit. People are saying, I beat this game. Loved this game. I think it's one of the coolest games ever made. It is obvious that it is a BioShock derivative copycat, but like, I love it. Like, I love BioShock. I want another studio to say, hey, we're going to make another version of BioShock, but with our own twist. Like, even the beginning of the game opens just like BioShock. Like, it is so heavy-handed with, hey, if you love BioShock, you're going to love Atomic Heart. It's set in an alternate universe where the SSSR, the Soviet Union, didn't collapse, and they ended up becoming like this great world power. But then things go wrong, and then it has like philosophical and political commentary. on lots of subjects. And there is by no way, shape, and form do they portray Russia as this like pure good. When all this controversy came out about being pro-Russia, I'm like, did anyone play the game? Like within the first 10 minutes of the game, the whole like thing goes south. It's not a huge spoiler alert, but you're in this like perfect communist utopia and then everything goes fucking south because it's BioShock. And it's like commenting on like this idea of utopia never pans out. And this, in my opinion, it wasn't pro-Russia at all. But there was all this controversy that this game is pro-Russia. And so I thought that was interesting. I was already deep into I bought this game, well, it was on Games Pass. So I downloaded it like day one because I thought the visuals looked so cool.
Well, you're telling me that people on Reddit probably didn't actually look into the actual meaning of the thing. They just took something out of context and then bitched about it.
It does happen occasionally. It's very rare, but that does happen, yes.
It was unfortunate timing, right? It was being advertised like the one-year anniversary of the invasion of Ukraine. But yeah, saying that this game supports Russia would be like saying BioShock supports the libertarian agenda in America.
Yeah, that's a good. That's actually pretty good based on...
It kind of takes a dump on communism, to my understanding, right?
Yes, by the end of the game... Definitely, it takes a dump on a lot of stuff, and it explores a lot of ideas that, not just communism, but it gets into AI, what makes a person, consciousness, and it plays with a lot of these stuff. And I would say the downside of it is, does the game as gracefully, I don't think BioShock games are perfect by any means either. They're just really good at what they do, warts and all. Is it as good as BioShock? No. But it's more BioShock that's pretty solid. The less you know about it, the better the experience is. So if you're going to play it, I don't want to basically like... It has a very similar BioShock Infinite. You go to a utopia, and then that utopia falls apart. And you have to kind
love
of...
Love that game.
Yeah. It's like... So is it's the same
similar,
premise.
Is it similar where it's like first-person shooter in one hand and like weird magical ability in your left hand?
Yes.
Yeah, cool. If you just go to YouTube and... Type in Atomic Heart, watch a video of
the
you'll
visuals
see it's very
and the art
BioShock.
Direction.
Gorgeous.
Are for this is Mudfish's first game. I'm assuming they're ex veteran developers from other studios because I've never seen a game from the first game from a new studio come out this well done, this polished. I'm on PC. I don't know about the console versions. I had no bugs. Launch Games Pass. I played the launch version. It's not a long game. Played through it all within like a week or two of launch. Story's awesome. Graphics are awesome. There's twists like BioShock, explores similar themes. You could argue, I would say the only criticism is if you really want like another BioShock, a lot of people might say it's not as good as BioShock, but in my mind, it's just more BioShock. And if you like BioShock, do I care if Elden Ring 2 is everything that Elden Ring 1 was and better, or if Elden Ring 2 is just another Elden Ring, I'm still going to be happy. That's how I felt about it. Like, I didn't really think about it. I didn't break down, like, okay, how does this actually compare to BioShock 1 and 2 and Infinite? It was, in my mind, I was just like, yay, more BioShock! And that's as far as I thought. Just loved it the whole time. But yeah, if you like BioShock, it's not a super long game. I would say it's 20 hours. I'm really shitty at FPSs, so you could probably beat it in 15 to 16. There was a few difficulty spikes, a few sections where I was doing a fair amount of trial and error. There was one section where the platforming felt unfair, and it was just frustrating. I'd say there was about 30 minutes of actual frustration where I'm like, this game design sucks, and then the rest of the game was awesome. Atomic Heart, that's it. All right, who's next?
Hey, number four for me is a game called Cross Code.
Yes! That game is awesome.
It is awesome. I played 90% of it in 2022, and I finished it in January. It is a really big game.
Yeah.
It's meant to feel like an MMORPG, but that's actually an important part of the story, is that you're... And it's done in an art style that's reminiscent of, like, Chrono Trigger, I would say, maybe. And so the aesthetic is really cool and appeals to me because it's nostalgic, but I thought the story was cool. I like the reveals. I love the little like platforming puzzles. Like you'd see a treasure chest somewhere, you'd be like, how the heck do I get it? And you have to go through like 8 different screens to find out how to jump from this ledge to that ledge to try to find. And I think by the time I stopped playing that, I did find every single treasure chest. It just felt like something fun for me to do. And so I had to look up a few of them that I couldn't get to. The story really fun. The way you level up and you can choose different, I don't even remember too well, but the abilities for your gun or whatever. A really clever game, fun little RPG. One of my main complaints is it felt like it went a little too long. Like they stretched out a little too much. I wish they had condensed it down and made it a little more concise game. My number 4, good game.
Cool.
I'll go. My number 4 is Paper Mario Color Splash for the Wii U. It was the last game I needed to play on my Wii U before that system dies, which I'm sure it will any day, even though my kids still play games on it once in a while. I've been playing through all the Paper Mario games, and when I got to Color Splash, I wasn't expecting a lot because it's not very highly rated. Most people don't like it at all that I've read about, but I loved it. I thought it was really fun. Every level was unique. They had a lot of really cool ideas they put into it. And despite the battle system not being the ideal Final Fantasy type party-based leveling up battle system, I still had a blast with it. If you just take it for what it is, it's a great game. And so that would be my number 4.
I got Super Mario RPG Remake for Christmas. So I'll be starting on the Mario RPG. Awesome.
Because that spawned all of these Paper Mario games. That was the original one.
So excited to play it.
Cool.
All right, Lauren, you're up.
So I talked about this one last year, but I hadn't actually finished it yet. So now I finished it. The funny thing about this game is I played it a bunch right before we met last year. And then I think I maybe played it a few more times in January. And then I didn't touch it until November. And so I think my vision of this game is a little bit messed up because I didn't kind of play it in one time period. Honestly, I might have put this lower or higher up on the list, meaning I would have ranked it lower. Some of the games I replayed, like Elden Ring and Bloodborne, I prefer over this game. I know everyone loves this game, and don't get me wrong, there were elements of this game that were just so phenomenal. Like the gameplay, to me, was the weakest part of the game. There were moments in the battles where I really enjoyed it, and I talked about this last year. After playing games like Elden Ring or the Star Wars Jedi games or Shadow of Mordor, like, I felt so limited all the time as Kratos, which is weird because you would think that you're supposed to be this like powerful god. But I felt limited. Like, I couldn't even move the camera half the time, and it really annoyed me. There are moments when you're trying to climb from one platform to the next, and literally the only control you really have over his character is you point the joystick for less than a second, and then you have to, and then it like has a little button appear on the next ledge that you can jump to, and you have to tap triangle to jump to the next ledge. And then you point your joystick for 1/2 second, and then you have to find the triangle and point again. For some reason that really annoyed me because like in the Star Wars Jedi games, when you're climbing, it's kind of like free climbing. Weirdly, when you're fighting these bosses in God of War, it's these amazing set pieces. And there are these moments where you're just like, your jaw is dropping because it's so amazing. The things you're doing as a character, except you're not really doing it. You're kind of watching it from a distance and occasionally pressing triangle or square. And I think it really pulled me out of the game. The story was great. The voice acting is just so phenomenal. And I really liked the ending of the story, and it was touching. But I was also annoyed most of the time that I was playing it because I wanted like more freedom.
Sounds like a Telltale game.
Here's my number 4 game.
Lincoln's favorite genre
sucks.
Games, Telltale. Lauren,
you've been praising all these games, and then you get to your number 4, and it's just all.
Well, and the reason this isn't, the reason is, it's only number 4 because it is my first time finishing it this year. Like I say, a lot of those other games on my list probably would have gone ahead of this. But they were replays, so I didn't feel like that was fair to put them further.
It sounds like my kind of game. I'm excited to try it.
I saw that in the background.
Is that it? I can't see. It's all blurry and bright.
I saw that sitting behind you, Steve Loper. It's God of War. Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. It is a phenomenal achievement, and I do want to play the Ragnarok, but I just realized that weirdly, you're supposed to be this godlike character, and I felt like my wings were clipped a lot of the time. I didn't feel like I was in control that often.
You flew too close to the sun.
Yeah, I don't know. It's an absolutely gorgeous game. This, like I say, some of the set pieces are just insanely amazing. But
Lauren, you shouldn't feel. I think I said the exact same thing when I talked about God of War, comparing it to Elden Ring.
Yeah, that's just the problem.
In some way, it's unfortunate that it came out around the same time, because you have Elden Ring where you have, it's so much more open, and God of War, it's more like being on a roller coaster. You're a little bit more on rails, although everything's really tight. The combat's very tight. It's just,
yeah.
It is more limited in its scope.
Yeah.
And so I think the back to back is maybe what caused some of that, but.
Well, and one thing I will give that game credit for, and I think we talked about this last year, but it really is like one continuous like game. Like there aren't like cutscenes or
yeah,
like pauses or fade to black. It's just like a continuous game. And that is a brilliant concept. Not to give too much away, but like the giant world serpent, when I saw that for the first time, I was like, wow, just blown away. Like I say, my jaw was on the floor a lot of the time of the game, and exploring some of the different areas were just gorgeous and awesome. But yeah, I think that's the problem. Comparing it to something like Elden Ring or my number one, which I'll talk about later, I'll compare it to that as well. It also feels limited, like a linear game, but it didn't do the same. It still, I felt like I was in control. I didn't feel like the game was letting me jump in sometimes. So I'll talk more about that. But anyway, sorry, I don't mean to bag on it so much. I understand why it's critically acclaimed. It's just, and I don't expect open world necessarily. I think I want a little more control and not to feel like I'm just looking for things that you can interact with to continue to play. You know?
Yeah. Well, you're not the first person to complain about like the whole quick time sequence, right?
Yeah.
Which is a thing that God of War does at times.
Right.
Press triangle, press square, and we're going to just continue along this little section of movie clip that you're watching.
Right.
All right. Loper.
Most of my games this year were falling in the 2016, 2017 era. This is actually the oldest game that I played this year, and it is another Alien game, actually. So I've got a theme going a little bit there. And ironically, actually, I just realized this is also an FPS.
Perspective. I don't play any FPSs. My whole list is FPS.
Only when I just really feel like I want to play one.
Okay, but I promise you guys the next three are not. No, I like FPSs when they hit this kind of category, and this game was Alien Isolation from all the way back in 2014. I was shocked at how old this was. If Aliens Fireteam Elite is the Aliens movie, this game is Alien, the original, the OG, the 1979 movie. In fact, the opening title has the fox, but it's like a bad tracking, scratchy video version of that intro even. And the best thing that I can say about this game, I think, is that as I was playing it, I had the same thought over and over again, which was, this game's 9 years old. It didn't feel that way.
Yeah, I mean, your default is 5 years old.
I know. And it felt like a game that was only 5 years old instead of nine.
Exactly. Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I was really impressed. It felt like a game from, you know, 2018 instead of 2014.
I've heard nothing but good things about this game, but is it scary?
Yes.
That's why I've never played it, because I don't like that kind of thing.
I have a love-hate relationship with survival horror games. Like, I played Soma a couple years ago. But this was closer to the survival horror. This felt a little less like those kinds of games, because you could somewhat control what happened. You can go through this whole game never being killed by the xenomorph. It's hard, but it can be done. the thing that I liked is that this gave you some of the tools to make that happen. You get a flamethrower at one point, so you can just like wail on the xenomorph. It doesn't kill it, but it gets it to go away for a minute. And so you have some defense. Most of these survival games, I just want to be done, but I'm amazed by the ride. This one, I relished my time with it. In fact, some of the reviewers of the game dissed the game because they felt like it dragged on. They didn't like the fact that it felt like the game was going to be over and then faked you out and it wasn't. It's interesting because you wanted the game to end because you, that's what your character wants. The character wants to get off. I thought the graphics, the voice acting, music, the ambiance, the lighting sounds were all top notch. The lighting was incredible with the dark shadows that you're having to hide in mixed with these super bright artificial lights. There was very nice fog, smoke, steam effects that help with your hiding. And I know that Aid loves sound design on a game. The sound was so good in this game. There's the footsteps, and just as they get closer, you can just hear them getting closer and closer. And the footsteps sound different when you're just in a hallway versus when you're hiding in one of the ducts. Some of the levels got a little annoying because they were the same. And there was some backtracking kind of going out and back. And that felt kind of lame, but at the same time, it felt really genuine because you're on a space station. You're not going to drop in on some ruined alien planet all of a sudden. Like, you're just some schmuck stuck on a space station. And so you're playing through the space station. And it was interesting because some of the levels, as they get harder and the difficulty ramped up, it was nice to come back to these areas where you're like, oh, I totally know where I am and I know where the ducks are and I know where to hide now. If you like the first Alien movie, I absolutely think this is worth a playthrough. One of the best games of 2014.
Reagan, number four.
My number four is another kind of lame game in a way. It's called Overcooked 2.
Well, that's what you do is you play lame games. We know.
I freaking hate that game. I hate it.
I love it. I love it. I'm a thumbs up.
It is way too stressful for me.
Strong opinions on this one. Huh?
We just played the second one.
Here's the thing. My wife and I were talking about it. She's like, you're going to put that on your list? I'm like, well, it is one of the games I played. And she's like, you hate that game. I'm like, I don't hate it. It stresses me out. You're like managing so many things at once. You're juggling a lot of balls in that game. And for me, particular that stresses me out, but I will say it is satisfying when you are working together with somebody and you have to get really good at communicating, talking to each other, figuring out who's going to do what. It's a difficult game in a way that Dark Souls is not. Dark Souls doesn't stress me out. It's just like, I'm going to grind this out and get through it. Overcooked stresses me out, but it is a challenging game and I do like challenges, so that's why it's here.
My kids love that game. And I played Overcooked 2, but I'm assuming safety.
Number 2 is what I'm talking about, yeah.
Every day, my daughter, my 5-year-old, is begging me to play it with her. She's like, play Overcooked with me. I'm like, I can't even. She's not that great at it either, so it was always a failure. But
isn't it kind of when you hear that, you're like, oh my gosh, it's going to stress me out to play that game. Do I have it in me right now? Okay.
All right, number 3. I went to my YouTube channel and I realized I made a severe miscalculation on what I played this year and what I played last year. And I realized there were some games that I thought I talked about last year, but I didn't. And then I saw that my YouTube videos that I put out on these games were this year. I'm like, oh shit, I did play these games this year, but I only have a few slots left. So I'm going to kind of cheat from my number 3. I bundled 3 similar games together. For my number 3, we have Symmetry, 3 games.
Can't do that. No, it's not allowed to put 3 games
in one. Here goes Cade's 3-1.
No. I'm just kidding. I did the same thing.
Sorry, guess
did
what?
That for 8.
We've all done it.
We're on my podcast. I can edit this how I want, so. it may be Robert's idea, but it's on my platform now, so. But I bundled 3 JRPGs together. They were going to be my top 3, and then I realized there was 2 games that I thought I played last year, but I played this year, and they're retro. So last year I combined Final Fantasy 7, 8, and 9 as one, and this year I'm going to do a similar thing. I played through the remake of Star Ocean Second Story R. All I'm going to say about that game is if you are into JRPGs, classic JRPGs, and you have been disappointed by remakes, Star Ocean Second Story R, they rebuilt the game from the ground up, but maintained the retro aesthetic, but then fixed all of like the archaic game design issues with old JRPGs. Even if you're not a fan of JRPGs, this one is fast enough and convenient enough that I would say it's worth playing if you want to venture into that genre, especially a classic one. The art style takes the Octopath Traveler, Live Alive remake, HD 2D, and just takes it to the next level. Characters have 16 or 12 degrees of animation. So, you know, when you play old 2D games, you have your up animation, your left animation, your down. And then some newer games, you'd have your diagonals. This has diagonals in between the diagonals. And everything is like fully animated. There's real-time lighting mixed with this like 3D background and pixel art. Best pitch is all the tedium and slowness of old JRPG game design has been removed, but all the good stuff has been maintained. It is by far the best remake. That's not a full remake, and it is so tight and so polished. So Star Ocean Second Story R. The next one is Final Fantasy XII. I replayed that, the Zodiac Age remaster with a bunch of mods. Final Fantasy XII is now my second favorite Final Fantasy. Everyone who shits on it doesn't know what they're talking about. The game is aged like fine wine. That's all I'm going to say. I didn't get it as a kid. As an adult, I replayed it and was like, holy shit, this game is just didn't hold your hand. People said the story didn't make sense. It didn't. There's no develop. No, you just had to pay attention to every line. And I think Game of Thrones prepared my mind to be able to keep track of like characters, their backgrounds, their loyalties. Because this game does a lot. But if you really pay attention, there's so much nuance in the writing and so many hints on what a character's motivation is and foreshadowing. It's all there. It's just not holding your hand in any way. It went from a Final Fantasy that I liked to my second favorite Final Fantasy. And last JRPG for my number three is an indie JRPG that came out called Sea of Stars. It's the same people that made The Messenger. You guys talked about The Messenger last year. I mentioned that this game was coming out. I had a ton of hype behind this game. It channels the vibe of Chrono Trigger, which is one of my favorite JRPGs of all time. And it is the only pixel game. Not only did I cry, but I cried hard, like pretty hard in this game. It's got flaws, but what it does so well, it does really, really well. So if you're into JRPGs, all three of those, I would say if you haven't played Final Fantasy XII Zodiac Age Remastered and you're into mods, you can make that game awesome. Sea of Stars out of the box, JRPG that came out this year, super solid. The writing is amazing. And it makes up for the flaws that it has. And Star Ocean's Second Story are the best remake I've ever played. So that's my JRPG trifecta for number three.
Nice. All right. My number three is one that Robert already mentioned. It's Remnant 2. So I don't want to say too much about this yet. But I will just say, during the first, like, maybe hour of playing this with Robert, I kept saying like, oh, dude, they changed this. That's so much better. Oh my gosh, they changed that from Remnant 1. That's so much better. As an example, when you're sprinting through a level and there's no enemies, your stamina bar stays full. Like, it's just such a simple thing that I think every game should do. And then when you're engaging with enemies, then your stamina bar will go down if you're running. But, you know, have you played Breath of the Wild? That's like the most annoying thing ever when you're just sprinting across town and you have to stop and wait for your stamina to regenerate. Hate that. Anyways, that's just one of like many, many, many things that they fixed in the second one, which I thought was awesome. So a lot of attention to detail. One thing I didn't love about number two is I feel like they sort of rip off like every single game you can think of. As an example, there is a whole level dedicated, it's basically Yharnam, but you're in there with a machine gun and you're blasting guys, which Robert liked that. That didn't appeal to me. I wish, you know, I think they can use their creative juices for other things. Cool game overall. Really fun.
All right, who's next? Robert.
So, Cade, you talked about some people love Final Fantasy VII Remake and some people hate it. I'm one who loves it. I played Final Fantasy VII Remake.
Did you play Intergrade?
Yeah.
With the
yes.
Yuffie? Okay.
Yes, I played all of it. Had a blast. going through that world in super high definition and seeing all the cool changes they made. My favorite part, interestingly enough, was when Cloud has to put on a dress and perform for trying to rescue someone who's in a difficult situation. And so as stoic as he is, he just owns this moment when he has to put on the dress and does it complete justice. And the whole game is just really fun from beginning to end. I mean, I have some nitpicks about it, but nothing that would prevent me from recommending it wholeheartedly.
Lauren.
So I kind of alluded to this already, but I played Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order, which is the previous one, as a lead up to the new one that came out this year, Star Wars Jedi Survivor. And I remember a few years ago before Fallen Order came out, I was like, man, I just want to play like a fun Star Wars game. And I feel like they totally delivered. Then they came out with Survivor and I wasn't going to get it, but there was a point this year when I was like, I want to get a new game. And I got it and I was pleasantly surprised. I really enjoyed it. Had a lot of fun. My only complaint about it is I think they tried a little too hard they tried to make it open world. And what I actually really liked about the first one was that it felt open enough, but it was pretty linear. And this one, what they do is they have like a point in the game where you get to sort of like a hub world where you're supposed to return all the time. And as you meet different NPCs throughout the galaxy, they'll go to this hub world, kind of like a Dark Souls game. And then you can like buy things from them. They can give you extra quests. And I found all that super tedious. And I just ignored all of the side quest stuff. And I basically just played the story and I enjoyed it. It's fun to kill stormtroopers and to dodge and ricochet blasts, whatever they call it, laser blasts from people. I just really enjoyed that gameplay. Everything felt smooth and fun. And even the story was quite touching in the end. I was surprised because I don't usually play these games because I love the Star Wars universe necessarily. I actually think it was probably a stronger story than the last three Star Wars movies. If they had done something like this as the story, it would have been more interesting than what they did with Rise of the Skywalker and all that, Last Jedi. In gameplay in general, like it's a little bit more Dark Souls. You have to time your dodges. You have to be really precise about when you block. Like, I do feel like the bosses in the Star Wars games are very forgettable. Like, I don't actually remember a single boss fight. And definitely God of War, like, all the boss fights were really cool. Yeah, the fun thing about Star Wars is that it kind of lets you see a little bit more of this giant galaxy that George Lucas has created. I enjoy the puzzles. I thought they were really fun. And yeah, the story was strong. Yeah, just a fun game. I would say I enjoyed it more than I enjoyed playing God of War. God of War was definitely a more well put together game. Well, and I will say, like, there are some games like this one where after I finish the main story, I want to keep playing and doing all the side quests and collecting things. Not with this one. Once the story was over, I was done. Like, I did not need to play it anymore. And there are some games where I just can't get enough. I want to immediately replay it. So for what it's worth, I really did enjoy it as I played it. But once I was done, I was good.
All right, Loper, let's hear it. Number three.
Yeah.
All right. My number three game of the year is Dark Souls 3 with the DLCs.
What? Loper put a Dark Souls game on?
Nice.
Right?
He is a few years behind, remember?
Yeah. I'm catching up. I'm getting there. So, Dark Souls 3 with the DLCs. Kierkegaard said, "The task must be made difficult, for only the difficult inspires the noble-hearted." And I think that definitely defines the Souls genre. I was playing it almost exclusively in a Dry Fingers 4-player co-op. And so we got invaded all the time with lots of invaders. The hardest challenge of this game was the RCE hack scare of 2022 when all the servers went down and we couldn't play together anymore. But it actually made it good for me because even though my favorite part about these kinds of games is co-oping, I really do like when I have an opportunity to just kind of sit and mull over the game myself a little bit. And we had just finished Pontiff. And there's a really nice branching path at that point. There's not a lot of bosses immediately after Pontiff. There's like three different paths that you can take with a bunch of areas that you just kind of have to like grind out the area. You can co-op them, obviously, but it's also the kind of stuff that took me back to playing Dark Souls 1. So I did everything from Pontiff to Aldrich, and then all of the dungeon and tower area before Yorm, which was kind of nice because we'd been just playing it multiplayer, which makes it easier. But then I got to play some notoriously annoying parts by myself. Oh, and I got up into Anor Londo. Comparing this to Dark Souls 1, which so far has been my favorite Souls game up to this point, I'd have to say that the world design for me wasn't quite as memorable. It wasn't quite as tight. But the bosses were amazing. I can remember almost every level from Dark Souls 1. Dark Souls 3 kind of blends together, except to say, oh yeah, that was the level with this boss.
See, that's interesting because as you've been talking about it, maybe it's because I replayed that game so many times, I can like run through the game in my head and like I know exactly how every level connects with every other level. But I will agree that, in my opinion, the DLC levels were the ones that the levels themselves felt a little more challenging and a little bit more Dark Souls 1-ish. And the bosses, for me, were a little actually less memorable.
I would agree with that 100%. Like, I remember the Ashes area, right? The snowfall, and it drops you off that cliff. And the big tower with the crap raining down felt very reminiscent of, like, Anor Londo, Dragon Slayer arrows shooting at you. And there were some levels that were more memorable than others, but I felt like the bosses were really the sweet spot for this. I liked the enemy design, the arena design, even the arena music, like the variety of the music with all the arenas. And the storytelling was a lot more fleshed out in this one, I felt like, than a lot of the other ones. But I was kind of disappointed that a lot of what came from this one was so derivative. And I mean, it's intentional, but it also was a little disappointing. I did like that the weapon and armor and shield variety were pretty good in this one, and that there were a lot of viable builds, right? Whereas Dark Souls 1 kind of like horns you into, oh, you're using an ultra great sword, you better be using this one. Oh, you're using a straight sword, it better be this one. Whereas this was nice, it kind of gave you some more options. And yeah, the DLC, the Ringed City was really nice. And that was kind of more of the fan service that I think the whole game was hoping to be. I really liked the way that they kind of wrapped everything up.
My number three is Tiny Tina's Wonderland.
Nice.
And yeah, just a funny game. Classic Borderlands.
That's all you're going to say about that one.
That's all I'm going to say. It's a great, I mean, it's hilarious, dude. What do you want? It's like Borderlands meets Dungeons and Dragons. It's hilarious. It's clever. When I first got to the overworld map and it was like kind of like JRPG style, I was like, oh, they're really doing this. This is hilarious. It's pretty cool.
Sweet, dude. Well, all right. Let's jump back up to my number two. I so far have been very disappointed that nobody has put this on their list, considering we are all From Software fans. And I was looking at the list. I think everybody put Elden Ring last year as number one, minus one person, if I remember correctly. You put the Steam Deck, Loper, and then everybody else put Elden Ring.
That's right.
And we've all talked about Bloodborne, and I think Loper said Dark Souls is your favorite Souls game, but someone else said Bloodborne. Dude, you guys need to play Lies of P. It's kind of like what I was saying. What was the game I was talking about earlier? Atomic Heart. And I'm like, look, is Atomic Heart as good as Bioshock? You could argue no, and maybe it's not. But I didn't care because it was more Bioshock, and it was close enough and faithful enough and enough of a variety of the Bioshock formula. It didn't matter to me. It was more Bioshock. I love Bioshock. I love Bloodborne, and we haven't gotten Bloodborne 2. We haven't gotten Bloodborne Remake. We haven't got Bloodborne Remastered on PC. We're apparently going to get a Bloodborne fucking movie instead of the things we actually want. So until then, the gods have given us Lies of P, and I don't love robots. But other than the fact than that, this is Bloodborne. I feel like they're like, how close can we copy Bloodborne without getting sued? Because we love Bloodborne. And some people say that, like, that's a negative. It's too much like Bloodborne. And this, there's certain things about it, like the story is nothing like Bloodborne's story. I mean, there's some themes. Even the way that, like, the UI, the enemy's UI, their health, the targeting system, it is assets that I'm like, they might have just ripped that from Bloodborne, or they recreated it, and it's so close I can't tell the difference. It's just, there's no hiding the fact that, like, hey, we love Bloodborne, we're going to make our own version of Bloodborne. And if you love Bloodborne, you should play Liza P. And yeah, it sounds weird. You're playing as Pinocchio and you're fighting robots. But don't let that fool you. It's Bloodborne. Just, it's Bloodborne and it's awesome. It's also really hard. I don't know what I can say. It has some interesting quality of life things that maybe you haven't run into that I think could entice you guys. One little thing, and again, depends on how into that get good, you want to be hardcore gamer mentality you are. But if you die in a boss fight, your souls are dropped outside of the fog wall so that you can re-get them without having to fight the boss again.
Yes.
That tiny little thing, I was like, this is a small improvement to the form. This is objectively, in my opinion, like I say subjectively, because opinions are subjective.
Objectively.
Subjectively, in my opinion, this is a better way to play. Anyway, that's my number two, Liza P, which so far the only Souls-like game that's been mentioned, right?
I would argue,
Dark Souls 3 is a Souls-like game.
It's not Souls-like, it's actual Souls.
I can't really counter-argue that Dark Souls is not a Souls.
How about Star Wars? Lauren listed two Star Wars Souls-like.
Also, there's Elden Ring, New Game +++, and Bloodborne.
And Remnant 2.
Okay, that was a joke, guys. That wasn't serious.
Well, and Robert has a whole list of Souls-likes.
Okay, my number two. Overcooked 2 stresses me out, but you know what's been stressing Kate out? That I have not talked about Symphony of the Night yet. So, it has landed at number two.
Oh my god, I really thought you were not even going to bring it up.
Huge sigh of relief. It doesn't suck. You know, that game is by far my favorite Castlevania game in my little replay through thing I'm doing. But never played it before, my first time, and loved it. And you know what's really makes it lovable is that Alucard is, he is awesome. He's fun to play. Like, you feel hardcore. You just feel tough. What marches through the castle, it's like he owns the place. Because he kind of does. But, yeah, anyway, it was really fun. The boss fights are fun. The playing through, it's challenging enough. I died a lot, but really, really good game. If you have not played Castlevania, Symphony of the Night, you need to play it.
I mean, it's the blueprint that almost every Metroidvania has at least borrowed some extent from for the last, forever. Sure. That upside-down castle flip was also, at the time...
Dude, mind-blowing.
Mind-blowing.
Yeah. I just remember thinking, cool. This isn't going to be the whole thing, right? Like, I get to do all of it again with new enemies. And it really was the whole...
Yeah.
I just got twice the game than I expected.
Because it's not, like, short getting to the end of the first castle. It feels like this could be the end of the game. Yeah.
For sure. I felt like it was the end.
And I definitely... I beat the game, like, the bad way, right? Didn't get the glasses and didn't get the upside-down castle. And I thought I beat the game. Until, like, and there's no internet, or I didn't have access to the internet or limited access. It was the typical, like, at school or someone was like, there's like a whole other castle. My buddy Joey Wallen. Shout out to Joey Wallen. I don't know where you are in life, but you're the one that told me that there's an upside down castle in Symphony of the Night. And I went back and, like, oh my God. Yeah, it was amazing.
My number two, actually, it's another remake, but it's Resident Evil 2 remake.
Whoa.
I got into the Resident Evil series late. I didn't play I started with the remakes because I never played the originals, but I decided to play the Resident Evil 1 remake, and then I played Resident Evil 0. And then Resident Evil 2, I fell in love with and completed it really quickly. I'd heard that you could play it as two characters and that you should complete it as both characters to get the true and full ending. And when I started, I'm like, well, I'm just going to complete it as one. I don't care enough to do two run-throughs of the same game. But I had such a fun time playing Resident Evil 2 Remake the first time around that I immediately wanted to go back in and play it as the other character. And this is the kind of game that is like it's like a roller coaster or a horror house in an amusement park where everything is kind of scripted, but in such a fun way that you just get a thrill each time you play it. And it's very well paced. You never get bored, but it also has moments where you feel you can breathe and relax and feel safe. And then it just puts you right back into the action. Every part of it is just very well crafted, really enjoyable.
Okay. My number two is, thanks to, I want to say, Steve Loper. I think you're the reason I played this, Dishonored 2. Wasn't that on your list last year?
It absolutely was.
You had Death of the Outsider, the DLC.
Yeah, Death of the Outsider. So, I love Dishonored 1. I love the Bioshock games. Talking about like Bioshock kind of similar style games, I love the sort of assassin side of it, trying to be stealthy and sneak around and hide and sneak up behind people and slit their throats. Like, I enjoyed it so much that's one of those games. This was my honorable mention is when I replayed it. It's the second I finished it, I was like, I gotta play again. I just loved it. I don't play those games for the story. I play them for the gameplay and for the just kind of the environment. Like, I love that kind of weird design illustrated look, that time period. I just really enjoy that.
That world is like one of the coolest.
Yeah, so creations. Cool.
Talked about this last time. Loper brought it up, and he's like, the art style, everything's like proportions are slightly off.
Intentionally off, yeah.
It's unnerving.
Yeah, I was really impressed by some of the level design. And I think you probably talked about this too, but there's one level in particular that I think Robert told me this year as we've chatted, that it's like kind of like considered one of the most popular parts of the game, which it's this house that you go into that the levels change and like, depending on buttons you press, different places open up and other places close off, and you can kind of go behind the walls and stuff. Like, I was just really blown away by that game design. I really, really enjoyed that. I played the Death of the Outsider DLC and don't remember the story. I played all of this like early in the year, and the story just didn't stand out to me. I, for whatever reason, was just not that interested in that. I just wanted to keep playing and sneaking up on people and being stealthy, and that's just what I loved about it, so.
Death of the Outsider kind of forces you into more of a chaotic, evil mode where you're just going whole ham on everybody.
Yeah. If you haven't played it, check it out.
All right, Stephen Loper.
Loper.
Number two for me is kind of a twofer, but I beat Uncharted 4 and Uncharted Lost Legacy. And I'm putting them together because Lost Legacy really felt like a DLC for Uncharted 4. Honestly, this series has really been one of my favorite PS exclusives, and I'm glad that they brought it to PC, finally. This last one of the quadrilogy was just absolutely wonderful. I love the visuals. They blew my mind. It was beautiful. The facial expressions, the animations were spectacular, and I was really grateful that they had the visuals for the characters to match the amazing voice work. I love the story. It was perfect for a middle-aged male who loves his wife more than anything else in the world, but still loves to be the best at his career. My biggest negative was the reliance on QuickTime events, especially in critical moments, like the end battle. The penultimate moment of 4 was basically be good at QuickTime events. And it kind of took me out of that immersion a little bit. But it was minimal. It didn't show up much. I liked the new lock picking mechanics. That was fun because you're like sneaking around, then you have to really quick like pick a lock before you get discovered. I think Uncharted is best when it is a stealth game, and it's a lot weaker when it relies on being a gun game because the gunplay is not great. But oh my gosh, is it beautiful. Like this last one, they were like, okay, this is probably the last Uncharted game we're going to make in a long time. And they pulled out all the stops. It's gorgeous. With Lost Legacy, I found myself just like pausing and going into photo mode and just like panning around just to look at the environment. A lot shorter than the others. Basically just a DLC. When considered as a DLC, I would put Uncharted 4 with this DLC as my favorite Uncharted game of all.
Wait, Reagan, number two.
So number two is made by the same people who did It Takes Two, called A Way Out.
Who'd you play that with?
I played it with both Alicia and my daughter, Naya. Kind of switched it up.
Thanks.
Wow.
When I first was playing it, I was like, okay, it's, I mean, look, It Takes Two is, they came into their own and the game is so much more polished. So when I was first playing A Way Out, I was like, all right, it's okay. It's fine. But as the game progressed, like there came a point where the storytelling started to do stuff that was very, very interesting. And by the end of the game, it's done something that I don't think any game has done. No game, and I'm not going to ruin it, but no game has ever done. What's really interesting about that game is it's something that can't be done in movie form. It can only be done in video games, which is very interesting. So they're really, really clever with the kind of things they're doing. And because it's co-op, that's why it can happen. So without ruining any of it, I'll just say I highly recommend it. And it's also not a super long game.
The ending blew my mind.
The ending blew my mind. Yes.
Robert and I played that together, and it was a fun game. In games like that, though, it really bothered me that my choices were binary and that I couldn't, like, choose a third option. You know what I mean? Like, it bothered me.
It didn't bother me at all.
I was constrained to that. Like, you have to live the story. You can't, like, choose your story.
What's interesting is,
because you lost
in that game. No. It didn't bug me because I saw what they were doing, which is just, it's like, that was the entire point of the whole game. The ending was the entire point of the whole game.
No, I know. I get that. I get it. It's like when you get the two dialogue choices, you're like, no, I would say something completely different. I don't know. It happens a lot in Remnant 2. I get it. It was a fun game, though.
All righty. Number one, back to me. Here it is, the finals. I just wanted to say before I say this, Sea of Stars was my original number one. Game is awesome. But I had to lump it in with the others because I talked about this game last year. I thought it was my number one last year. It's the only game that I've made a review for on my YouTube channel, reviews are not for me. And it's also, I don't play these type of games. I don't play military shooters. I don't play FPSs, but Titanfall 2, I didn't play any multiplayer. It's a pop song. It's a Taylor Swift song in the FPS campaign formula, and they fucking nailed it. I legitimately got really emotional at the climax and kind of, obviously I don't want to spoil anything. Both games are number one essentially because they built up a character. They justified that character's personality. They justified the situation and the dilemma that you end up being. And then they justify why that situation is emotional, and it all makes sense, and it's done at the correct pace. I don't play FPSs. I actually don't play them. I'm not like Loper. I can't think of another FPS I've put on anytime recently.
Doom.
Atomic Heart. So I had two. Games last year, and I don't believe there was an FPS. So I rarely play them. So despite it being a genre that I have a little bit of aversion to, I don't even know how to talk about it if you haven't played it. The gameplay is awesome. I mean, I'm not an FPS master or enthusiast by any stretch of the means. So I think my opinion that the gameplay is awesome, take that with a grain of salt. I don't know enough about FPSs to really judge. It felt intuitive to me. I played on a controller. I felt like Halo, just snappier. I never felt like I was battling the controls. I did what I wanted to do. And when I died, it's because I made an error in my choice or my strategy. Not because I wanted to do something and the character did something else. But most importantly, like, there's just characters and some relationships that are built in that game that when the stuff happens, when the twists and the climaxes and stuff happens, you kind of realize they do really good at, like, foreshadowing what's going to happen. Oh, I know it's going to happen. And then they don't do what you think is going to happen. They twist it. Then they actually do what you initially thought they were going to happen, but it's not quite the same way. And man, when it ended, I just thought, like, okay, that's a single player campaign. That's the formula nailed. That is a pop song. And it's just been, even though it's not my style of music necessarily, I can appreciate that this is a master crafted song. It's the same story you've heard over and over again, just done
really well
in a really good way.
And You haven't even talked about the level designs. Some of the levels are some of the most inventive, creative.
The factory level. I can talk about that.
The factory level. Yeah. Oh my gosh.
there's a level where you're fighting through basically an automated AI factory where they manufacture like buildings, like neighborhoods. It's massive. And there's these huge like supply lines, supply chain lines that are constantly moving and parts are coming in and the machines are like building all this shit. And you're like running around and fighting on this like ever changing level because it's all like a construction site in motion, but you're fighting guys. So you're
like running through a house while it's being built. It's like this prefab home.
Yeah.
So you're like running up these stairs and they haven't put the front on yet. And then the front goes on and then you can like jump through the window.
And then the machine will like tip the house upside down and like connect it to this piece. And the scale is like, we're talking.
It's huge.
It's huge. It's like super futuristic.
Death Star size.
And
Death
Star level. How do you even build a level like that? That's amazing.
It's massive. Yeah. And then the entire thing gets turned sideways and you have to scale the neighborhood. That's tilted.
Yeah,
it's like 90 degrees.
That's so cool. It's how often awesome. Are you actually in a Titan?
Quite a bit. I'd say it's like 50-50, maybe maybe 60-40. The there's a scene where they kind of build up to it, and then you and like a team of Titans all storm a base about halfway through the game. That's sweet. And so it's like you and all your buddies, and you're all in Titans, and you're storming this base of other Titans, and it's just, it's awesome. But I'll say is this, BT is my boy. BT is my boy, and there's a character in Sea of Stars named Gar. That's my boy. And yeah, they nailed it. They nailed it. Brothers for life.
All right, Gibbons, you're up.
All right, number one for me, if you guys didn't already guess, is Remnant 1. Now, Remnant 2 would probably actually be my number one if I had finished my platinum of the game. But imagine playing Elden Ring, and you get to the end, you beat the game, you explored every nook and cranny, and then you decide to play it again. But this time, things are shifted around. Some of the maps moved. You might encounter new bosses that weren't in your first playthrough. I think that's the magic of Remnant, because it's randomly generated worlds each time you play. What's kind of neat, too, is you don't have to reroll the entire campaign. You can say, like, they have an adventure mode where you can reroll a certain area and encounter new NPCs, new bosses. The bosses in Remnant 1 and 2 are awesome. I feel like they were really unique. It felt Dark Souls in that way, too, because each one you fought was, it felt original and didn't feel like a cookie cutter type of thing. And then they have cool weapons too. Remnant 2 built on that, did it even better, but weapons that you can mod and add really unique effects to, like light your bullets on fire but really fun games, very Dark Souls-ish in my opinion. And I love the randomly generated world. Robert hasn't experienced this level, or maybe it would have been higher on his list, because after we played it together, I played through, try to platinum the game and encountered so many more bosses and so many new little areas. And it's been a blast. With both games.
I've always had an issue with games that relied on procedural generation. They've almost never stuck with me.
Yeah.
They did a good job. Like, I think that they limited whatever code they built into this to keep that from being something that felt weird or maybe led to just like some random dead end or something. I don't know what they've done, but I felt like the maps coalesced really well, even though they were.
I don't like procedural generation either, usually, but these are the exceptions. Remnant does it really well. All right, I'll move on to my number one, which is another Zelda game. I wanted to bookend my 10-in-1 with Zelda, so this is The Legend of Zelda: Tears of the Kingdom.
I was wondering if someone was going to bring up Tears of the Kingdom.
You've probably all heard a lot about this game, so there's not too much I can say that is new. But the thing I want to stress about this game that made me enjoy it so much was the ending. So I'm not going to give it away, obviously, but it was so much more epic than I thought it would be, and I had such a blast playing through the story of it. And that's not even to talk about all of the things this game is normally praised for, which is how much depth there is. The world is packed full of things to explore and do and see and interesting tidbits in every nook and cranny. But then the story on top of it is just really cool and epic. And so that's why it's my number one.
It really is incredible. It's hard to like, I'll set a task for myself and like, yeah, I haven't beat it yet, but I'll set a task for myself like, oh, I'm going to go try unlock all the towers. And man, fast forward like 3 weeks and I'm still stuck in one corner exploring all these little things that distract me. It's pretty great. It's some game.
All right, Lauren.
Well, okay.
another caveat.
No. This game is actually two games. I played The Last of Us DLC for the first game, and then I played The Last of Us 2, and I'm counting those as one. Here's the thing. Rarely do I play a game that impacts me in the way that The Last of Us 2 impacted me. The only other game I can think of that impacted me in that way was The Last of Us 1. You know, the show came out this year, and so I finally was like, I have got to play the DLC for The Last of Us 1, because I never... Something about finishing The Last of Us 1, I didn't want to move on. It left such an impression on me, and I know we've talked about this before. But anyway, I finally played the DLC, which was absolutely wonderful, and then watching the show. As far as, like, adaptations go, The Last of Us show was really impressive, but it still just doesn't hold a candle to the actual game. Especially because, you know, at the end of The Last of Us 1 and at the end of the show, there's this moment when you, as Joel, don't get to make a choice. You have to, right? That really impacted me. It makes you think about games and how you don't really have a choice. Games like to pretend that you have choices sometimes. I've talked a little bit about how I've been playing Fallout 4, and it feels like you have certain choices. It feels like you can choose how you want to approach conversations with people, all this stuff. But at the end of the day, they're still trying to push you down a path. And The Last of Us really made me think of that. Anyway, The Last of Us 2, I knew some of that stuff was coming, and I don't want to spoil it. Boy, the way that the stuff played out impacted me in such a way, and it made me think about things I've never thought about before, about people I think of as my enemies. It does this brilliant thing where it makes you play two sides of a story, and you don't really get choices. You know, when it gets down to the end of it, you have to keep pressing the buttons if you want to finish the game. And you have to do things that you wouldn't do as a person, probably. But you still want to see it through. And they're trying to, you know, Stephen Gibbons, you were kind of talking about this, how you don't like it when games kind of force you in that way. But there's something beautiful about the way they force you to think about things that you don't always necessarily want to think about. This is not one of those games that you play that's just like Flowers and Sunshine. It's not a Mario game. It really is like you have to be in the right mindset for it. The Last of Us 2 impacted me, and I think I finished it, I don't know, early in the year. And it stayed with me all year. And then once you finish the game, it unlocks all these extras. And so this is the first Naughty Dog game I've ever played where I actually liked the gameplay. Even The Last of Us 1, there were elements of the gameplay I enjoyed, but there were also elements of it that I was just kind of like, okay, let's get through this. This game, I enjoyed the gameplay so much that I replayed the game and skipped some of the cinematics. Sometimes I didn't because it really is a very well done story and everything. But I also played with the extras turned on, so like unlimited ammo, that sort of thing. And I just like would run through and sneak around and blow people up with explosive arrows, and it was super fun. So I actually really enjoyed the gameplay of this game a lot, and it felt more free and open than any other Naughty Dog game that I've played. But it also still was definitely pushing me down a path. Man, I keep falling back to the character elements, and it made me think about humanity. This is what these games do. They make you think about things that you might not otherwise think about. They put you in someone else's shoes. They make you press buttons that would be choices that that character would make, not choices that you would make.
Yeah.
And then you have to think about those consequences. And that was just a beautiful thing for me.
I beat Last of Us 2, and I thought about it for months.
Yep.
I would just be in the shower thinking about that game. That's all. Like, you have to play it. You have to play it.
I completely understand the controversy, but I also love that this is something that video games do that other media can't do. And when it's done as well as this was done, it's art. It really is. It gives you that cathartic feeling that that art should give you. That I just really appreciated it. But it's hard. It's not easy. It's not like a easy story to swallow.
It's an emotional story, and they took huge risks with that game.
Huge risks,
and I think it's a masterpiece. Like, I
absolutely
100%. Yeah,
kind of surprised that they pulled it off, considering how I felt the same way about The Last of Us 1. This one elevated it somehow. I don't know how they did it. Also, there's this really fun mechanic. There's a character in it that you play as that has a fear of heights. And there's this really fun mechanic where any time that character leans over a ledge, everything, like the level itself, like the focus of the camera changes and everything stretches and everything looks farther away. And the character starts to like breathe heavy. And like, that was a really cool element too, that just like blew me away, that they did this thing where you feel like you're the character and you're experiencing these emotions. Mm-hmm. Really cool.
The reason I didn't play that game when I had it is because the only discussion I'd had, I think with Robert or maybe with somebody else, was just like that it was way darker than the first one. And man, that first one was such an emotional investment with a payoff for sure, but still just a huge emotional investment. And I was honestly trying to work myself up to it. But this conversation has helped. Like, you guys telling me that this story is as good as or better than the other one really helps me want to like dig in. I think I'm ready to.
But it is dark. It is dark, and it isn't necessarily easy. I mean, it makes you think.
And neither is the first one.
Yeah,
I just heard it was so much more. I thought, ooh, and it almost in my mind, I immediately set up maybe a protect myself kind of block. Like, oh, this is going to be so dark that it's going to detract from the story or something, you know? And I'm like,
no, myself. Well, and I will say this: replaying it through the second time, I had a better appreciation for the ending. Because I knew it was coming and I was able to process it a little better. The ending made me tear up. It's really beautiful.
Ending was, if you have kids, I think the ending will hit even harder.
Well, the first one was like that, right?
Yeah.
If you're a dad, you know.
That's kind of a part of it. In the first one, he's kind of like a dad figure to her. In this one, she's like a grown up. She's like a teenager grown up. And my kids are getting older. Yeah. It's like being an older dad. I related to it even more somehow.
Like watching kids make their own choices, not have any control.
Yeah, all of that.
I know what that's like.
They're really good at showing that everybody's motivations are understandable. And there's a good chance if you were in their shoes, you'd have the same feeling. Even though you thought this person was the bad guy and this person was the good guy, by the end of the game, you're like, well, I'm not really so sure anyone's the good guy. Or anyone's the bad guy. And I can kind of see where everybody's coming from, and makes you think about the cycle of violence and human nature and all the shades in between black and white and all the gray in the middle. And
but it also has a really beautiful message about forgiveness, which I appreciated. Yeah. Just, it's a masterpiece. And the gameplay was genuinely fun. I really enjoyed sneaking around in these overgrown neighborhoods and, you know, taking people out one by one. Like, I didn't enjoy that nearly as much in any previous Naughty Dog game. So that's my number one.
No, it's the game that awesome. Deserves all the time you want to give it. All right, Loper.
This is a perfect segue to my number one. So last year, everyone had Elden Ring, except for me, which is the most awarded game of all time, beating out the year before that, The Last of Us Part 2, which had been become the most awarded game of all time, overshadowing my number one game, which held the title of most awarded game for 5 years. It received 260 Game of the Year awards, and by a year after its release, it had 800 awards total, and that's The Witcher 3, The Wild Hunt. I'm so driven by stories and games, and the story in this was supposed to be the highlight, and it absolutely delivered. It's based on novels, after all. And it wasn't just certain times that it delivered on the story. It was consistently over and over. Even just characters walking in the streets had interesting dialogue. A lot of people had simple responses, but a lot of times you'd have really beautiful flavor text that was just not expected. The quests in the game were consistently awesome. Even the most banal seeming quest would end up being this like grand adventure that you ended up going on. That was incredible. You'd think you're just hunting a monster, and you'd think, oh, I'm taking a monster contract. It's going to be just like all the other monster contracts. And it never was. Like, I can't really think of any quests where I thought, oh, I've done this quest before. Like, every time I got a quest, it was genuinely like, oh, okay, how is this going to play out? I know the buildup to this. I know what to expect. But then it would subvert my expectations consistently, which was just so amazing. I would argue that some of the most banal quests in this game were as good as the best World of Warcraft quest chain. It's so incredible. On top of it, I was amazed at how incredibly complex and nuanced the choices were, how emotional it was. And the icing on the cake for me for the story was that so much of the lore is based on fairy tales and old fables that got turned on their heads. The graphics, the incredible lighting, the shadows, the clouds, the textures, the day-night cycle, the costuming alone made me want to like get into cosplaying just so that I could dress up as some of these characters. They were so amazing. And I'm amazed that CD Projekt Red decided to make this game a labor of love and to say, we're releasing another game that is now like a benchmark for everything, but we're going to make this game look just as good 8 years later as we hoped it would look initially. Gameplay seemed limited and straightforward at first, but then once I started to understand the alchemy system, applying the oils, the different sword types, the magic casting, I actually went for a magic casting build, and having the sudden sign casting, the quick casting, made all the difference in the world, and it turned me into this like really versatile magic caster. It was awesome. And then finally, Gwent. Holy crap, what a game within a game. Initially going into it, I'd heard about Gwent and everyone got addicted to it and whatever, and I was like, I'm more interested in the story. I don't care about card games all that much. 2-3 matches in, I was like, I'm getting every card, I'm doing every quest, I'm going to talk to every like merchant because I want to buy all of these. When Steam gives out their end of the year awards, the Labor of Love Award, I think could have gone to Witcher last year because they released 4 major versions of the game over 7 years after its initial release. They've released that over 3-ish generations of consoles. It originally came out PS4 and Xbox One. Then they released it on Switch, which was, again, we were talking about the miracle of Tears of the Kingdom, fitting The Witcher on a card with no downloads was also a miracle. And then they re-released it on PS5 and Xbox X and S.
Mm.
They've constantly refined the gameplay with no stopping. I think this is, for me, I've loved the Fallout games, Skyrim, the Mass Effect series, but I think this is hands down the best RPG of all time.
It's up there.
And I actually went back through the last 5 years that we've been doing this, and I would put this game above any of my number one games.
High praise.
All right, the final countdown. Send us off, Reagan.
My number one game is Little Nightmares. That game, my daughter started playing it at first, and I was just like with her watching her, and then she couldn't do something, so I would take over, and then we were going back and forth. And man, the art, that's like, man, if I could ever create a video game I would be the most proud of, that would be like that. It's just the art direction is the best. It is the best. And like the story is so good. Without any dialogue, you absolutely know what they're trying to say. What's interesting is without ruining anything, you kind of see it coming. They're doing a good job leading you down this path. But then the way they hammer it home in a way you're like, okay, they really hammered that home. It's just, and I have Little Nightmares 2 now, so I'm going to go play that one soon.
I was going to ask if you played the second one.
I haven't.
Really great too.
I'm so happy to hear that's on your list, Reagan, because I actually started playing Little Nightmares 2 like 3 days ago, and I love it.
Yeah, those were both on my list, I think, last year.
Yeah, someone brought both of them up last year. We talked about them. I remember getting the video.
Why I bought them. And then I just finally played it. It was just recently.
It was also my daughter who got me into it. She was like, Dad, I really want you to play this. And so it was also fun sharing that with her because it has some interesting lore, and like the environments and everything are so cool and interesting. And yeah, really great. And they're very short. I think you can play them in like 3 hours, maybe.
I'm looking at a full game walkthrough. It's 2 hours on YouTube.
Yeah.
I could just get it and play it. You could beat it in a night. The characters that they're making, there's how creepy they are. It's so good. It's so good. It's like Tim Burton on steroids and way better.
Yeah.
It's a good game. I like it.
It reminds me, actually, when I was playing, I'm like, oh, this makes me want to go play Inside again.
Yeah, so that's what I was just going to say. It was a little bit of Inside and Limbo and all of that. Yeah,
that's really high praise. I love Inside. That game was amazing. Yeah,
Steven, you'll really like Little Nightmares.
I'll get it now.
Well, that was super fun, guys.
That is everyone.
We went the 5 hours, like Lauren said. He
that was not shorter.
That was really great, guys. Always a pleasure.
For sure.
I think I got 4 games I'm going to play because of this discussion.
I'll try to get it out before March this time. We'll see.
All right, dudes. We'll take care,
everybody.
Gentlemen.
I hope you guys enjoy.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year,
everybody. See you guys.
Take care.
Yeah.